The All Things Fun Podcast, Episode 1, April 15, 2007. And welcome to the very first All Things Fun podcast. My name is Ed Evans. I'll be your host. Today, in the very first podcast, we are going to talk to Glenn Walker from ComicWidows.com fame. We're also going to talk to Wes Hitchens and James Evangelisti in our very first game segment. We're also going to tell you a little bit about All Things Fun and just why we're doing a podcast in the first place. And we're going to have our very first contest. So without further ado, let's break it in a little bit, talk about All Things Fun. All Things Fun is a toy, game, and comic shop located in beautiful downtown West Berlin, New Jersey. For those of you geographically challenged, West Berlin is a suburb of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We've been open for a little over 3 years now. We've pretty quickly become one of the premier toy, game, and comic shops on the East Coast. That's allowed us to get a lot of really neat information, and we thought we'd start putting together some shows to pass on some of this industry news, insider information. We'd review and discuss various games and comics, and then go on location. We've got some special shows planned in the near future. We're going to attend the Gamma Trade Show in Las Vegas. We're going to run a show from there, talk to a lot of folks about game products they'll be shipping in the next year. We're also going to be doing a special show for Free Comic Book Day. We're going to host that at All Things Fun. All kinds of neat events scheduled for that day, so we'll be hosting a show there as well. We've got a number of other special shows here. We've got some large interviews. We're going to break into some smaller pieces, and we hope to get at least one show out a month. But if we have additional content, we'll add more. One thing of note before we get started, these shows are very much a work in progress. The podcast website is podcast.allthingsfun.net. You can also send us feedback, suggestions, comments, that sort of thing, at the web address feedback@allthingsfun.net or storenotes@allthingsfun.net. So without further delay, let's get started. So we're here with Glenn Walker, owner, columnist, operator, editor, the comic review website, comicwidows.com. Did you say that's fair, Glenn?
Yeah.
So you had a pained look on your face there?
I do all that? Yeah, sure.
I didn't say you're making any money. I just said you're doing the work.
No, there's no money in it. It's a labor of love and stressed marriage.
My understanding is you're a huge comic fan, that you're just a positive man.
Yeah, I love them so much.
It's safe to say you're a positive force in the comic industry?
I think so. It's an art form that deserves recognition, and we're not getting it.
Well, let's take a little time here today and maybe talk about some of the current titles that are out and your feelings with them. And I think any kind of discussion on current comics would either fortunately or unfortunately have to start with Marvel's Civil War.
Yeah. We were talking about this earlier, how it just looks great, reads great. You can't beat McNiven for images. But it's like a beautiful Porsche. Love the lines, love the speed. But you open the doors, dead bodies in there, riddled with bullets. It's just, I love Civil War. It got people going in the industry, it got people going in fandom. Everybody wanted the next issue, running into the store to get it. But what's going on in it, it's just terrible. These aren't the characters we've known for 40 years. Captain America's not acting like Captain America. Iron Man's not acting like Iron Man. Good story, bad characterization, pretty much a trademark at Marvel right now. But
how do you really feel about that?
That's about it, yeah. It's pretty much line-wide, I think.
I mean, that's probably a fair assessment. I mean, I was definitely in the comic, in the Civil War camp right up until that last issue. Like I felt like I couldn't steer the bus anyway, so I was going to ride along. But the Spider-Man, the unveiling of Spider-Man.
Done well, yes.
Yeah, but like you write yourself in a box, so what are you going to do with that? You know, how do you...
It's going to make people write well. It's going to make people think. It's going to make people do the work rather than the same lazy stuff they've been doing for, I'll give it 20 years. The character needs to grow. That'll make the character grow. May not be what we want, but it's going to make for good stories, hopefully.
I have to give him credit in that
compared to, say, House of M, which is a big event before Civil War, it just felt like I was watching paint dry each week. And at least here, issue one, you know, Cap wrecks a shield carrier, and, you know, issue two, Spider-Man takes off his mask. Like, there was stuff going on every issue until the last issue.
It was event driven. You wanted to find out what happened next. And the last issue, we got what we wanted.
I was sorely disappointed.
No, we wanted the big superhero fight.
Yes.
And that's... Millar pretty much took it to where every Marvel fan wanted to take it. What did we love about Marvel? Thing versus the Hulk.
Yes.
Hulk versus Thor. This is what we always wanted.
The hero fights, yeah.
Avengers versus Defenders. We wanted to see this crap, okay? And crap not in a bad way,
in a good way. Yeah, good crap.
He gave us the ultimate superhero slugfest. It's what we wanted. What we didn't want was Captain America crying.
Yes.
We didn't want him beaten. We didn't want him humiliated. We didn't want the people he was protecting to yank him down and say, dude, stop. The thing about Civil War, like I said, well written. That's the only way it could happen. You want to play in character? He should have figured this out issue one.
Right. Right. That's my argument. That was, he was back to being Cap.
Yeah.
But six issues too late.
Now, the problem is, with the ending of Civil War,
right,
there's really only one outcome.
Somebody's got to die.
That's the only way he can get out.
Right.
You can't have a humiliated, defeated Captain America in prison. He's got to die. It's the only respectful, the only logical way out.
Well, I think that led to some of the disappointment. I think a lot of us thought, because there was the buzz before this happened, I think a lot of us thought that was coming in 7.
Oh, yeah.
Not to be wheeled off in his own book somewhere later on.
That's why it was such a surprise. Right. I think it was brilliant marketing. Everybody said, Cap's going to die. It's going to happen in 7.
Right.
No.
Right, because we bought lots of 7.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody's got 7.
You got ripped on 25,
oh,
though,
yeah,
right?
You really did. Yeah. 4 copies, 25. Yeah. 10,000, 7.
How do you feel about the Marvel releasing the news to the media early in the morning when they know nobody's going to get the comic until noon?
You know, that was a bear. That was a real, that
they,
was a real
they
bear.
They knew this. How could they not know that's how it works?
Oh, they clearly knew. I mean, when you saw the little publicity engine at work, the articles, you know, some of the larger retailers had the book the day before. To their credit, with very few exceptions, they just kept their mouths shut, you know, and just tried to place quiet reorders. But, you know, to get more.
Did anyone that came in the store that Wednesday,
mm-hmm,
not know when they got here?
Not that I'm aware of. I think every single person, because it was a question of the day.
They got it on the news. They, yep, got it on Yahoo. They got, you know,
friends calling. I mean, when we picked up our freight early in the morning, and we're here several hours before opening, going through our stock and selecting things, and the phone was just, in the morning we don't usually answer the phone because we're busy, we're not open, you know, they're ringing off the hook. You can hear the emails in the back, ba-ding, 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 ba-ding. You're like, well, something's going on, you know. So you start to take a call and you're like, oh, let me look at this book. And I mean, and to be honest, we did have a pretty big stack of them because it was a Civil War crossover, and we have lots of folks who read Civil War, so we had a stack of them, but the vast majority were accounted for. Yeah, there was no call on the side, hey, Ed, this is going to be a big book because Cap dies. You might want to buy up.
They should have told you. They wanted that second printing. That great way of saying, hey, look what we got. It's like showing off.
Yes.
I hate that.
Well, and to be fair, they did a substantial overprint. I mean, nobody's discussing numbers, but it really smells like they ran, you know, 100,000 copies of that book, when that's a Civil War number. Mm-hmm. So they knew they had something.
So they knew printing wise, but they didn't know press release wise.
Right, what they were going to get. Well, they knew. I think it was just easier to throw, and it was, if you look at this from a cold calculating standpoint, it's easier to throw the retailer under the bus because that's the weakest link in the chain. If anybody's going to crack, it's going to be the 3,000 retailers out there.
Puts a bad taste in the person that only comes in a comic book shop when an event happens.
And can't find the book.
They come. It's the same time. The death of Superman speculator type person.
Yep.
They say, oh, wow, I got to get this. They go to the comic book shop. We don't have it. Looks bad.
It does.
It's bad on the industry.
And DC, to be fair, handled that pretty well. Looking back, now it was a different world. Now, you know, I, as a retailer, was not around, but I called the number of retailers that were. You had multiple wholesalers at the time. Some bought big, some didn't. So a lot of comic stores were able to get reorders and still put that book out of cover, but some couldn't.
Still, that was a surprise. They weren't expecting that. I think that's the first time that happened where an event occurred and it was a slow news day. Nothing happened that day.
That's true. Although
and that helped a lot.
It did. I mean, the other side of that, though, is that that was a two-tiered release when that happened. It was when they announced it, the book was not actually out yet. Similar to when you found out in 52 that the new Batwoman was a lesbian.
Yeah.
That broke, and the book didn't ship for another 2 or 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. The same thing happened with Superman. That broke, and everybody's like, this is the date that book actually comes out. So when people came in the stores, they had their black armbands. Like, the staff was ready. They were prepared. This is the death of Superman. But here, that was not the case. I mean, we only knew because we heard on the news. Like, even look at the cover. This isn't the Nothing, Cap's yeah. Dead cover. Yeah. So, and heck, after reading the book, I'm not even sure Cap's dead. I mean, you read that thing, you're like,
See, that's part of the problem with it. It's not a problem. Brubaker is a really good writer.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say comics are a ghetto, but I could see Brubaker making that jump to mainstream publishing like nothing.
It's true. He tells a good story.
He's very good at what he does. So much so that no matter how much I hate Bucky being alive, you read the story, the logic's there, it works.
Yes.
And you believe. Same thing here. I don't have a problem believing what I've read. And I don't think anybody else could have pulled this off, actually. I don't think Millar could have pulled this off. Mm. I think that's a credit to what Brubaker does.
I do find it interesting that they gave that to him in his book, in Cap, rather than the Civil War. I mean, they took a beating the 2 weeks going up to Cap 25. The A on Captain America's head stood for France, and I mean, they were just, you know, there's all kinds of terrible things. Just ending that story on such a weak note.
It had to be that way.
Well, it's clear, I mean, now, yeah.
Like I said, there's no return from the depths he sank. The only way out was that. Now, I don't doubt that Captain America's going to be back.
Right.
I just don't think Steve Rogers is going to be back. I think too much has been said from the Marvel higher-ups about Man Out of Time being played out.
Right.
This is a guy from literally the 30s and 40s. You can't play that forever. They don't want to play that forever. He's the last of a dying breed. He's a hero. He's a hero that's been proven wrong. So we'll see another Captain America. He'll be one for the 21st century. It'll be Winter Soldier.
Right.
It'll be the Falcon. Maybe be the Punisher. Maybe that kid they're calling Captain America Jr.
Right.
It's not going to be a true blue American hero. It's going to be something Frank Miller-esque. It's going to be dark.
What about this talk that the, I don't know if you've heard this, I'm springing on you, the 1602 Captain America is in continuity? Have you heard any of that ramblings?
Not being that familiar with the story of 1602, only what I've heard from other people. I suppose it's possible, but it seems too obscure for Marvel to take advantage of. It seems like two different worlds there. If it were like DC, where everything exists together,
yeah,
I could see that. At Marvel, things get a little separated. You can't really believe that Daredevil exists in the same world that, say, Thor does. I mean, it used to be true in the 60s and 70s. I can't see it now.
Right. Doesn't really make sense.
It's a different... It's almost like two completely different worlds of physics. You know, Daredevil jumps off a 50-story building and lands on his feet. That's not going to happen.
Right.
If he does it in a Thor book, oh, yeah, then I can see that. Different worlds.
Thanks again to our co-host Glenn Walker of ComicWidows.com. We'll be continuing our interview with Glenn in our very next podcast. He'll talk a little bit more about Marvel Comics, and then we'll also talk about DC Comics and some of the exciting stuff they've got planned for later 2007. It's contest time. Okay, everybody, here's how the contest works. The next clip I'm going to play for you is going to be a mashup of a bunch of different TV or radio intros. They all have a common theme. They all involve heroes. Entry is easy. Just send us an email at feedback@allthingsfun.net with the names of the heroes in order as they appear in the clip. Again, send your entry, names of the heroes in order, to feedback@allthingsfun.net.
Faster than a speeding bullet.
Believe it or not, it's just me.
So,
Send us an email with your name and physical address and the name of each of the featured television or radio programs in order to feedback@allthingsfun.net. Contest runs through September 15th, 2007. We'll award at least 5 All Things Fun prize packages to our lucky winners. Good luck! Let's jump right into a conversation with game gurus Wes Hitchens and James Evangelisti as we talk about some of the newer Euro games to hit the market.
I'd like to begin by saying that I refuse to recognize the rights of this committee to ask me these questions.
Well, in case I haven't mentioned it before, or my badly edited process doesn't bring it up, this is your host, Ed Evans. I'm here with Wes.
That's me.
He's officially known as a construction estimator, but also game aficionado and local ne'er-do-well. And Jim, of course.
Yes.
High school teacher, but we of course, affectionately know him as Ultron, Destroyer of Worlds.
Oh, thank you. I didn't know we were going to be formal.
He's going to wear a tie. So in any event, though, back to Rio Grande and their habit of picking games that we can't pronounce here in the States.
Yeah.
There's another one that came out. Was it Hermagor? Anyone?
That's what it looked like to me. I've got no clue again. You just go phonetic with it.
You're fine with that?
I'm not really sure what that is.
Nice. I'm so glad we don't charge people for this podcast.
Yeah.
So we've got 3 guys that don't know anything about games. As far as I can tell, it's a new merchant commerce game. And then, of course, Marvel. Reasonably sure I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are fine with that. We voted.
Marvel?
Yeah.
Which one?
Marvel. The the new Fantasy Flight board game.
Okay.
Okay. You guys had a chance to crack the box top on that one, either one of you?
Great pieces, and an incredibly large board.
Yes, I saw that.
Yeah. Is that like a 3-folder?
Yeah, it was most impressive. As far as I can tell, in a 2-player game, you only use Manhattan.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then anything else, then you get to play with Bronx and Staten Island, which is very nice. So what games have you guys been playing of late? And they can be out of print, Jim. It's okay.
Okay, well, I have been playing mostly out of print games for the past decade now. I guess the last thing I've played is House Divided, I suppose. Phalanx.
Midnight, no, that's in print.
I like to play the old versions. No, I'm just kidding. No, I enjoy that. That's a Civil War grand strategy game. I think it's probably the most accessible for most people, and it's probably the easiest to play, and I think it's very accurate historically. A lot of fun.
How many players did you have last time?
Two.
I actually played against Jim.
It was? Okay.
Yeah. And I can say, as a new player to the game, I picked up the rules relatively quickly. The details, I mean, the game has a lot of depth. I lost for very good reason, but not until the end of the game did I realize that, or why, so much. It wasn't for lack of understanding. So yeah. It's a game you can pick up, and then it takes a while to master. That's, I guess, what you're looking for, mostly.
Yeah, there really wasn't a lot of opportunity for me to withhold rules from Wes that could work to my advantage. He did pick up on it very quickly.
Nice. I caught him a couple times. As you know, I read rules in my spare time, and I had to object several times.
So tell me about the game board and some of the general mechanics.
You obviously play as Union and Confederate. I sat on the north side of the board. Jim sat on the south side of the board. It's split up. You see the major cities in the country at the time. It's not necessarily actual Civil War battlefields. I don't think necessarily, because you can have some fights that didn't occur in the war. You could have the great battle of Cincinnati. It could end up like that, I guess. You fight for control of victory cities, the more important industrial centers. They're connected by road, rail, river. It's a good looking board. I mean, you look at it and you know exactly what you're dealing with, what territory, So it's well laid out. It's well planned.
So 2-player game, about how long do you guys play?
I'd say it's a long one, maybe 3 hours
total. Yeah, I think 3.
We played it over the course of 2 evenings. Yeah. We played it on your Wednesday night board game night. We got it over in 2 weeks.
I guess it took about an hour to go over the rules to basically learn the game and, I guess about 3 hours of play.
Well, and again, for those who haven't picked it up or just my bad editing, we're actually recording the All Things Fun podcast at a game store after hours. So we're sitting at the back gaming room tables, and actually it's kind of amusing because they're up front trying to be really quiet as they ring out some customers. Hi, guys. We're waving to them now. And it's really cute because the mics can't pick them up. They can be as loud as they want, and it wouldn't matter. But it's fun to watch them kind of move around like that. So what have you played, Wes? Besides, I guess the last game you played was with Jim. So
Other recent ones, I played Runebound two-player.
Oh, yeah.
And
Fantasy Flight Game, right?
Yes. And that went very well. I'd played solo to learn the rules. I've played it with a group of three, and now that was the first play with two. Other than that, I've also played Cave Troll two-player two times. I liked it a lot, and it's a good two-player game, but I could see how it could scale up to more players and be more fun.
So tell us about that. That's Fantasy Flight. That's Tom Jolly, isn't it? That's a reissue of that at that.
Mm-hmm. It's one of his, I think he's got a, did he do Drakon?
I believe he did, yeah.
Okay. So right around the same time, Fantasy Flight, I think they're included in their Silver Line.
I guess I should nod. Sorry, go ahead.
And they're both decent quality games. I mean, the retail price is right. Really high quality components, highly detailed plastic minis, and nice looking tiles. It's a good game.
And pretty comprehensive rule booklets, I think, too, with lots of examples and explanations. I think that's a good thing.
Not too shabby
for those types of games.
And that's all Fantasy Flight, isn't it? We're talking about the Silver Line. That's part of Fantasy Flight as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I also got a chance to crack open that, going back to that Marvel game again, because we're All Things Fun is actually representing Fantasy Flight at the 2007 New York Comic Con. So we'll be doing some demos for their products. Had a chance to crack open Marvel myself and take a look. I mean, you guys are right about that. It really is gorgeous. I mean, the only concern I had is that it really isn't for fanboys. Like, that's a fairly... I'm sure I want to say hardcore, but it's definitely a little, it's more than Monopoly. I mean, there's a lot going on there.
Yeah.
With the various missions and all the rules and the pieces and the parts. And I know they're trying to teach one of our younger players, Dave, how to play. And it was a lot to grasp. So I'm not sure, other than the fanboys who are going to purchase it for just, it's Marvel, so I got to have it. But they might be in for it when they crack that box. It's not simple, by any stretch of the imagination.
It is, with a license like that, you expect them just to paste a theme over top of, like a themed Monopoly or a themed Risk, and it's a standalone game, and it's got a lot to it.
It really does. That said, I mean, it looks pretty good. I mean, you're not going to sell a lot to just the comic guys, but that said, I think the game guys need to give it a second look because there is some depth to it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, from what I've seen, I think it's interesting because a lot of games like that that just get tied up in. Essentially assigning numbers for different skill points, and really it's just pairing up numbers and to give you a dice roll differential. But that one I think is neat because it brings in some powers that are unique to the characters, and gives it some flavor that way, which a lot of times is lacking in superhero games.
The price point it's a little steeper than you'd expect on a crossover game, but that's clearly why. There's actually a game under the hood, which is not too shabby. Yeah. It's pretty nice.
You could pick it up online pretty cheaply.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
I actually did,
I'll have to check and see if I can say Rat Bastard on a podcast.
I don't know if you know this, but I returned the copy that I bought in front of you.
And for those of you who might have missed that, I run a game store. And, we'll just move along to the next topic.
We'll continue our conversations with Wes and Jim, our game co-hosts, in the very next All Things Fun podcast. Thanks for listening to the very first All Things Fun podcast. Make sure you send those comments to feedback@allthingsfun.net and check for our show notes at podcast.allthingsfun.net. We'll see you soon.